Final hour of the show, Overdrive on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also up on TSN 4. Mark Rowan for Brian Hayes this week, joined alongside Dave Poulin. And we'll be joined by Dave Naylor in a couple of minutes to talk about the CFL and trying to get that season going and whether or not they play in a hub and whether they can play something like six games. But, you know, the hub in Toronto and the hub in Edmonton, we are getting more details on what those hubs would look like. And Bob McKenzie, in the latest edition of Insider Trading with Gino Retta, outlining where teams will be staying. And each city would have two hotels. And for Toronto's sake, it's Hotel X, which is in the exhibition grounds, and right, the Royal York. And five teams would be staying at Hotel X: the Bruins, the Lightning, the Caps, the Flyers, and the Penguins. And at the Royal York, on top of the Maple Leafs, would also be the Islanders, Hurricanes, Blue Jackets, Panthers, Rangers, and the Canadiens. So
in the sequence, you've got the four bye teams in each, the East and the West. The four bye teams are in the same hotel.
Yeah.
So Pittsburgh's the only outlier that joins the four bye teams, and Edmonton and Nashville would be the outliers that join the four bye teams in the West, the JW Marriott, which is attached right to the building
of the,
you know, yes, in Edmonton.
Yeah, so you wonder, I assume that they would want to narrow it down to one hotel at some point. And
yeah, you know, I think a lot of it is just going to see how it goes. If things go well, respectively, you wouldn't want to move a team. And, you know, everyone is, the final two teams are going to Edmonton at some point, or one of the teams from the East is going to Edmonton. So you're getting down through the conference finals. You would think that they would use the Coca-Cola Center, the formerly Rico, where the Marlies play, as a practice facility for one of them. I'm sure the Ford Center, Ford Performance Center, out off of Kipling will be a four rink pad. That will probably be a site where you'd put, you know, a couple of teams in each of those four rinks, with multiple locker room facilities. And it'll all be done in a manner that, you know, is balanced and fair. And just, I guess I'm a little bit intrigued to see the way it's split up. But I guess, you know, you've got to do it in some fashion, and number of rooms and number of suites available and separating by floors, and all those things come into play.
Yeah, and if they are using the Ford Performance Center, you know, obviously players will be loaded onto a bus and they'll go directly to the hotel and back. But that is where, you know, the increase of a risk happens. And I full faith in what the NHL will try to execute here. But that I'm sure that is something that the Toronto bid had to explain, you know, because it's not.
Yeah, we had not heard multiple hotels. We had not heard multiple hotels, right? We thought it was going to be housed in one property. But this obviously allows for a lot more separation, a lot more spacing involved, you know, with, and don't forget, everyone has their own room here. So, you know, you want to space them out and probably want a floor above and below each group of players or each team for every standpoint. And then you've got your management group of approximately 20. And already, you know, Bobby McKenzie said that, or tweeted that, you know, teams may be looking to bring a player or two less depending on what their roster looks like. And, you know, when it was originally outlined that there was a minimum of one equipment trainer, one medical trainer, there's going to be more than that. I mean, there always are three equipment trainers, three medical trainers, four medical trainers. Who's inside that bubble? Who's outside the bubble? And I see largely management being almost exclusively outside the bubble, like almost no one from management inside the bubble, because those are premium spots for medical people, sports science people, all those people that have touch with the players every day.
And can theoretically Kyle Dubas do his job outside the bubble the same way he would inside?
You'd have to have someone in. I think he would be the point person inside, is my guess.
Right.
You know, he'd be the communicator inside on a daily basis, talking to coaches. I would imagine that position, that Kyle Dubas would be inside the bubble, and then potentially everyone else on the management side would be outside.
Like if you're choosing between an assistant GM, like a role that you had with the Maple Leafs, or another trainer, they're probably going to pick another trainer, would they not?
No question. Right. No question. Another massage therapist, another you know, therapist, another whatever that may be. You know, there's one chiropractor involved. There's one psychologist, sports psychologist involved already. So yes, they would go to those, you know, the hands-on people that make it all work in the locker room environment would be the premium of those 51 positions.
Yeah. And I'm sure you saw the food that the NBA players were welcome to in Orlando, which
Everybody's scrutinizing every part of that, Mark. Everyone is, you know, however that was posted, everyone's going to be scrutinizing everything that's happening. The players are, management is.
There's a standard for NBA or NHL players. There's a reason why one of the hotels.
There's a volume as well.
Wow.
I mean, for these guys, they're eating.
That is true. That is true. Our CFL insider, Dave Naylor, now joining us on the show. Dave, how are you? We're talking hotels here. What are the hotels like in Winnipeg right now?
Well, that is the question. In fact, I was just talking to somebody about this 10 minutes ago about, you know, when you see the NBA has a $150 million bubble, you know that the CFL's bubble is going to be drastically scaled down for that. So I think, you know, their bubble is basically, I think, going to be cordoned off hotels, you know, like, and that's one of the real challenges. I mean, with the money that CFL players make, and now they're being offered a chance to play for a third of their salaries and committing to essentially living in a hotel room for up to 3 months. And I know because of the caseload in Canada, the hope for the CFL is that, you know, they will have to begin the season in a quote unquote bubble. Mm-hmm. And that as things go along, I mean, the province of Manitoba had its eighth or ninth day in a row without a new case. So it's about as COVID-free as any place in North America. It's actually funny, you know, the opposite. You've got, like, the NBA where the worry is that the community is going to infect the players. And in the CFL, the concern is that the players, you know, a lot of whom are coming from those areas, Florida, Texas, California, Mississippi, the Carolinas, would infect the community potentially. So, but I think that's the league's hope, is that because Canada is so far ahead of the U.S. on this, that eventually your players might not be confined to the bubble and that fans may actually be able to attend games.
You know, at one point, Dave, you weren't very optimistic that there would be a 2020 season. Has your outlook changed at all?
I guess it's improved a little bit, but my sense is still, I just think there is such an enormous to-do list for the league, you know, to get all this done. They've got to get a deal done with the players on a 2020 CBA and refine the 2021 CBA. Now, whether that one has to be done, but they got to get down the road and have some strong understandings about that one as well. They've got to get approval from the province of Manitoba and the city of Winnipeg, which I believe those conversations are well down the road, but that's not done. They've got to get money from the federal government, which I think is going to be positioned in such a way to ask the government to pay the players. So they're not actually giving money to the owners in the league. And, you know, these are guys, working class guys who are going to play for a third of their salaries. A lot of them would be collecting CERB if they weren't playing. And most of the money is probably going to be, you know, dumped back into the economy pretty quickly. So you could make an argument on that. They got to get a refined broadcast deal with our employer. And then you got to pull off all the logistics. And if we were sitting here on May the 9th and not July the 9th, I would feel a lot better about the chance. It just feels to me like an awful lot to do for something that I don't think can drift into August.
Dave, just crossing your eyes over to what has happened in the NHL, you know, maybe as a precedent for the CFL in terms of getting a labor deal done with a return to play deal. Has that surprised you with the fluidity of that, watching that happen, particularly for a long-term deal? And is there a chance that could happen in the CFL?
It has, because of course, you know, the history of acrimony between the NHL and the NHL Players Association, yeah, has been well documented. And this is one real difference. And it's funny, the CFL has a commissioner, Randy Ambrosi, who's a former player, you know, but the relations with the players have not been very good, really over the last couple of years. And they hit a real sort of rock back in the spring when the league first announced that they were not going to start training camp on time. The CFL Players Association said, well, you're in violation of the CBA right now, and any player who wants out of his contract should be allowed out of his contract to, you know, find a job in the NFL or whatever you can do. And the league really took that as opportunism, and that really chilled the relationship. And there basically wasn't a lot of communication for months as this has gone along. And I contrast that to Gary Bettman, who, you know, when I watched him on the Mike Greenberg special that we ran on TSN, the Return to Play special, and Mike Greenberg was interviewing him, every sentence Gary Bettman said was in engagement with the players, you know, in consultation with the players, with our players. I mean, it was so clear that he understood that to get this thing to happen, the players had to be lock in step. So I am kind of surprised because there is a lot of pressure on both sides. And, you know, you could certainly see why there might be at least this season a lot more to gain for the owners than the players. By the time you get to next year, it's more of the players than the owners. So it is kind of surprising and impressive to me how quickly things came together in the National Hockey League and how they used this to hammer out, you know, a road to the future.
Our CFL insider, Dave Naylor, joining us. In another part of the country, there is a big story when it comes to this league, and you hope that one day we can talk about the Battle of Alberta, and it's the Calgary Stampeders versus the Edmonton. I'll leave that blank for now. Do you see that organization changing their names in time for the 2020 season or 2021 season?
They're going to make a decision very quickly. That's what I do know, that this is going to happen pretty aggressively and then by the end of July. And they're going to go back to the communities in northern communities in Canada where they've been before, that they've engaged with. They have some programs there that, you know, they go up there and players do things with young people. And they are going to speak to some MPs, you know, maybe some that they haven't spoke to before. They are taking, I think, suggestions on organizations that maybe weren't part of the consultation process. This all started for them in 2015. When there was a prominent Inuit leader who said, you know, we don't like this. At that time, the previous president, Len Rhodes, you know, led the sort of delegation up into the north and say, okay, well, we're going to do this in consultation with them. And it was amazing, the statement that Jordan Tutu put out last night on this.
Yeah.
The reaction that got, you know, I read it and I thought, man, that is like authentic and so well written and expressed. And really, for the sake of the Eskimos, fortunate that they pretty much are doing what Jordan Tutu prescribed in his note that went out on Twitter last night, where basically it's like, hey, and even, you know, when I was talking to the Eskimos and asking somebody in their organizations, they're like, well, why don't you guys just like change the name because there's so much momentum? And the sense I got from them was that, you know, they've all the whole road, it's been, hey, we don't want to do anything without consulting with the people whose name this reflects. And so if you've done that all along, you don't want to say, actually, we don't need you anymore. We've got to make this decision by ourselves. We're dumping the name. Because there are a lot of people that like it. And you saw that Jordan Tutu said it doesn't offend him. I think it's a generational thing for some people. Like, a lot of younger people don't like it. Older people might be okay with it because they grew up under that name. But Jordan Tutu, as a relatively young guy still, didn't have a problem with it. So it's going to be tough because obviously there's going to be some people who don't like it. So, you know, they're looking for a consensus. You're never going to get 100% consensus. What do you do if you find that 70% of the people like the name, but 30 don't? And the 30 who don't really don't like it. It's a tricky situation. I kind of inquired a little bit because there have been some words that, you know, they may have registered another name to prepare for this or something, but apparently they haven't. Like, the one you hear kicked around is the Edmonton Empire, because then they could keep the EE, right? All the logo and everything would be the same, but apparently there's no name, other name registered. But this thing is, I think the one thing they don't want is this to kind of drag over them, you know, for months and be seen as kind of like the Washingtons, where it's like they're trying to avoid it. Edmonton has never been that way. They've had a very different approach to it. They've been open-minded to the conversation. And I think they want to put this behind them one way or another very quickly.
Yeah, very, very strong first-hand statement put out by Jordan Tutu that I thought really encapsulated the whole situation really, really cleanly. Another case of a, you know, of an athlete getting involved and
yeah,
voicing an opinion that was really, really good. Dave, when they do start to play, any idea of, is it the timing, the gap between games, the couple of games a day, anything talked about even to from a term of scheduling and how this might look?
Well, and the one thing in the CFL you have also to deal with is that you've got nine teams, so you don't have a balanced schedule. And what they usually do to kind of accommodate that, that's the reason the CFL has three bye weeks. Like, some people say, how come the CFL has three bye weeks? Well, because when Randy Ambrosi took over the league, there were some teams playing three games in 12 days or four in 17. Mm-hmm. And he said, yeah, this isn't safe. You know, that's not a reasonable thing to ask professional football players to do in any league. So they put in three bye weeks. And they don't have that. Well, one of the things that the players are being asked to agree to in part of this amended CBA for 2020 is games that could occur on 4 or 5 days rest. Now, part of why they think that they can do that probably is you're talking about a 6-game regular season, not an 18-game regular season. But in terms of, you know, how this is going to be laid out, it's not altogether clear, but there is certainly an advisory to the players that one of the things they're going to have to agree to is less than the standard number of days off in at least some games. And they're basically going into kind of a tournament format, right? Like eight of the teams are going to advance into the quote unquote playoffs. So you're playing six games to warm up and basically it's almost like a six game preseason.
Yeah.
And then you're going to play a tournament. That's essentially what it is. They're only going to eliminate one team.
All signs point towards the NFL having a season because it's the NFL, Dave. Is that business just too big to allow something like a virus to get in the way of a season being completed, as crazy as that sounds?
I don't think anyone's too big for this, honestly. And talking to even some CFL guys who, you know, regularly have conversations with people in the National Football League, their counterparts, you know, they've been telling me that over the last 2 or 3 weeks, a lot of them who believed that the league was going to play now have their doubts. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's all kinds of issues here. Like, I don't see this ridiculous thing coming up about don't exchange jerseys, but, you know, knock the crap out of each other for 3 hours before that. And even, like, just the way football locker rooms are, it's kind of a competitive advantage thing. And other sports probably do this as well, but it's really dramatic in football. The home locker room is like, you know, a ballroom. But the visitor's locker room is usually a lot tighter than that. And it's designed that way. And the other thing, in terms of, you know, virus spread, football players tend to be laid out in their locker rooms, and they tend to socialize in groups by position, right? You'll see the offensive line eating dinner over here, right? And the defensive backs doing something else over here. There's a real kind of team within a team aspect of football. What you think about coronavirus, what do you do if the offensive line, you know, rips through, or if coronavirus rips through your offensive line and knocks out six of them, you know, a week of a game? Like, that's something that the NFL may have. It's unlikely you might get, you know, an offensive lineman, you know, a cornerback and a kicker are the three guys. They're probably going to be from the same position. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, when you think of how they practice, where they're located in the locker room, and how they socialize, you know, when they're not in uniform. So, you know, the only leagues that seem like they've got the best shot at this are, and I was just talking to somebody in the CFL about this right now. We were talking with the NFL and saying, okay, these guys are going to be living in their homes. Some of them have kids that are going to school. Mm-hmm. So they're going home. Their kids are coming home from school. They're interacting with their kids, their wives, and then they're going back to the locker room the next day. I mean, I know it's far better for life than living in a bubble, but when you're talking about the numbers of players on an NFL roster, I believe their roster's expanded to this last CBA, and they may be playing with bigger rosters even this summer. Excuse me for not knowing that off the top of my head, but you know, it's not like a basketball team. I mean, it's
your mid-50s.
Yeah, sure. Your mid-50s, and they're going to expand the practice rosters to, I think, 16. So you're getting up to, with injured guys, practice rosters and rosters, you're getting up to about 70, 75 guys, you know, to be able to manage. So it's the bigger the number, the tougher the logistics, the more things that can go wrong. Look, there may be an NFL season that gets to the end, but I'm telling you, there are going to be some hiccups along the way.
And college football just continues on, right? The Big Ten announces today they will play a conference-only schedule, and you talk about one behemoth and another.
But you are watching the college football numbers. You know, you're having teams with 9, 10, 11 positive tests.
LSU 30, you know, Carolina the other day. And the interesting one for me, and it's funny, I heard you guys on radio talking about this conference the other day, or earlier in the show, in baseball, is the SEC in football, right? Because the SEC in football is, that's not sport, that's religion.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is woven into the fabric of life there. It also happens to be hardcore Donald Trump Republican territory. Like, when Donald Trump appears on the screen of an SEC stadium, it's cheers, right? Not like it is when he's in his home city of New York. So it's people who politically lean in his direction, people who love football as much as anything in life. That's going to be the interesting one for me to watch and see, you know, in places like, you know, Alabama and LSU and Tennessee and Texas A&M, are they going to let anything stand in the way of a college football season? But we're starting to see it already. I mean, even when I was talking to a guy at Oklahoma State, you know, 2 months ago, and he was saying, yeah, we're going back to spring ball and we're planning on having full stadiums and all this. Well, you know, I don't think they're having full stadiums. No. Maybe they will in Oklahoma. My God, they hosted a Donald Trump rally. I shouldn't say that, but, like a lot of things every time somebody says you're doing something in this world, I say, no, you're planning on that.
Yeah.
we'll wait till you're doing it when you get there.
Yeah, right? Plans and protocols. That's the world that we live in right now.
Exactly. Now, that was, you know, you saw, like, there was a story today that Texas high school football may not go. Again, there's another activity that's not far from religion in that state.
That is society being broken up right there. Dave, always appreciate this. Good chatting with you, and all the best to you and the family at the moment.
Hey, it'd be great to see you guys again.
Yeah.
It's almost as good to talk to you.
Yeah, almost as good. Thanks very much.
See ya. Bye.
There's Dave Naylor, TSN's football insider, on the prospect of a CFL season, which looks like would be a six-game season in a hub city, which would be Winnipeg. Again, that is a plan. Nobody knows if it's actually going to happen. It could move cities. It could move the time of the year. The amount of games
can
change.
And once again, Mark, everybody's just hoping for success with the other leagues so they can emulate them. That's what they're hoping for. You know, in some fashion and even the rest of society waiting to see, can we come up with something that's effective for restaurants to reopen to a better part or whatever that comes out of this situation.
The Toronto Raptors hope to be effective in a hub in Orlando and defend their title. With more on that, we're going to be joined by Jack Armstrong when Overdrive continues on TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4.
Now, back to Overdrive.
Overdrive continuing. Mark Rowe in for Brian Hayes this week alongside Dave Poulin. We are excited about the Raptors, who have made the trip from Fort Myers, Florida to Orlando. Teams arriving all week. The hope is that they'll be able to have team practices this weekend. It would be the first time that they would have team practices since March. And with more on the NBA, we're joined by our Raptors analyst, Jack Armstrong. How are you, Jack?
Mark, I'm doing great. Dave? At some point, we're going to play golf again.
We will do that, Jack, for sure.
And you'll take some skins from Dave, right?
No, absolutely not.
Jack's Dave, a player. Dave? Jack's a player.
No, not. I'm a terrible player. I'm really, really good at the 19th hole. I'm like club champion there. Right. But the first 18 is problematic. But Dave's a champion at all 19 holes.
The 18 holes, that's your preseason. Right? Those are your exhibition games. Those are kind of like...
Well, you know, my motto is you don't want to peak too early. You know?
Right. And you could say the same thing about the Raptors. You hope that they don't peak in the eight games that they'll play for seeding. You hope that they will peak in the playoffs, whoever they play in that first round. But, it is interesting to see not just where the Raptors finish, but who they end up playing in the first round. Because some of these teams, Jack, don't exactly look like they are playoff caliber teams. When you look at the Brooklyn Nets and the Washington Wizards, it just seems like the field maybe was a little too big for this format.
Well, you know, obviously if the Nets were healthy, they had a good year. They've had a good team. Unfortunately, Kyrie Irving's been hurt. Kevin Durant's been out the entire year. But, you know, the Nets, when they've been healthy, have been a good team. And in my opinion, a solid seven seed. And, you know, if KD was healthy and Kyrie was healthy the whole year, they'd be much higher in the standings, obviously. But they've been just absolutely devastated with injuries. And now, unfortunately, some of the positive tests, COVID tests, and it's really compromised their team. On the other hand, you look at Washington. I wasn't a fan of this 22-team format. I thought we should just go right into the playoffs. Mm-hmm. I mean, you look at the Wizards. Obviously, Bradley Beal's not going to play. Beatrons, who's going to be a free agent at the end of the year, is a terrific shooter. You know, so they're not very good either. So I would say that Orlando will likely rise to the seventh seed. And you're going to have Brooklyn and Washington and, you know, I guess last man standing, I guess. Right now Brooklyn has the advantage there in terms of number of wins and all that. You know, and for the Raptors, it's a matter of do they hold on to the two seed or do they fall to the three? If they fell to the three, it would probably be Indiana because Victor Oladipo isn't going to be able to play He's coming back from a serious injury. Came back a little bit towards the end of the season before things got shut down. He had an Achilles tear, and actually it happened against the Raptors a year ago. So I would imagine they would probably end up being the team that falls to six. So you're probably looking at playing Indiana or Orlando, and they played Orlando, obviously, last year in the playoffs. So, to me, I think the Raptors are a really good team. I think they're a contending team. And the thing I love about the Raptors in this whole thing, because home court has become a non-factor, you're playing in a neutral environment. And the thing I love about the Raptors this past year, I don't have it in front of me, but if I'm not mistaken, they had the same record at home as they did on the road.
Yep.
Both records were tremendous. So to me, it's the old line, I don't know if it was Aristotle or Socrates, some smart guy said, excellence is a habit, not an act. I think the Raptors have really good habits. And in a neutral environment, I fully expect them to be really good, just like they were at home this year, just like they were on the road.
Mm-hmm. Jack, reach back and put your coach's hat on, and you're Nick Nurse. You know the Raptors well. How are you handling this first group of games? Are you pretty much leaving it to the players to dictate what happens initially? Because the temptation's going to be there to overcoach in all the sports that are coming back.
You know, it's a legitimate point. I've actually talked a little bit with Nick about it. My experience with the 50-game season in the 98-99 lockout season, as well as the, I think it was 2011-12, it was a 66-game season, and now these teams will end up playing 72 when it's all said and done. The one thing that really suffered dramatically was the flow, the execution, the picturesque play of offense. Teams really got stuck in the mud and got bogged down, and it wasn't pretty to watch. And I really think the first eight games of this are going to look similar, because the teams that are there, particularly if you look at the Raptors' schedule, I mean, they're playing a terrific, they have the toughest schedule of any of the teams. Good teams expose you.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, I think your offense suffers a little bit. The good thing the Raptors have is I think they're an excellent defensive team individually, collectively. And I think you might want to put a little more emphasis on maybe going a little deeper into your roster, put a greater emphasis on your defense, which creates, if you get stops, missed shots, turnovers, you're able to get out and get your running game going. And it loosens up the pressure on having to execute a ton in your half-court offense. So, to me, as you go along in this, I think the better teams, the teams that will advance, will be the ones that have good role definition, good chemistry, good shot selection, ball protection. They're just sound. They don't beat themselves. They don't shoot themselves in the foot. Because I think some of this stuff early on is, I'm not going to lie, I think it's going to be a little sloppy and disappointing and hard to watch, because guys haven't picked up a basketball in a while, and it's not going to look like it normally does. And even when you get in the playoffs, you're going to say, man, that doesn't look as good as a playoff game I watched 5 years ago. I think if you have an expectation that it's going to look as good, I think it's going to be disappointing.
Jack Armstrong joining us on Overdrive. The Raptors have arrived in Orlando. They spent the last 2 weeks in Fort Myers. They had their small groups doing workouts. But I guess the more important fact out of that trip to Fort Myers is zero positive tests. How much has the last couple weeks become an advantage for this Raptors team as they now enter the hub?
You know, when I look at this team and knowing the people involved, the thing that jumps out at me is the fact that it's a very mature professional group. So now you take that one group and you add another 21. And some of these teams in particular, when they know that they're going home, how are they going to conduct themselves? Are they going to continue to be vigilant within that bubble? Even if you have a playoff series where you have a team down 0-2, 0-3, and they're saying, get me out of here. You know, that to me is a concern a little bit, because that could compromise the better teams. But to me, I don't think the Raptors will compromise themselves at all. I think it's a very good, mature group that I think the fact that they were able to get away collectively as a group, and obviously yet they've been separated on a number of fronts because of the protocol, I think they all get it already. Like, it all resonates, it all rings true. They know the seriousness of it. They've bought into it. And to me, again, I think it just speaks to professionalism and maturity that this group has that I think will definitely give them an added edge compared to their competition.
Jack, is it too simple to say this team will go as Kyle Lowry goes? Or is there someone else that you think could be a real sleeper in this entire mix?
Well, you know, I mean, I said it in the beginning of the season before we even started. You know, you lose Danny Green and Kawhi Leonard, two guys that were excellent players. Obviously, Kawhi was next level. The two guys that were the most important players for the Raptors this year were, Norm Powell and OG Anunoby. And when the Raptors are really ready to play at another level, it's when those two young guys are playing with, they don't have to be great. They just have to be good and got to be consistent. And the other element is health. I think if you have Marcus Gasol healthy and people are healthy and ready to play, I feel very confident that they have the know-how, the institutional knowledge, the experience, the togetherness, the professionalism. They got a great coach who will handle himself, I think, in an exceptional fashion, in interesting dynamics, to say the least. But I think those two guys are the most important elements.
You know, and you brought up Marc Gasol, and it's fascinating, Jack, because, you know, we've never had this before. We've never had a 3.5 to 4 month pause in the middle of the year, and players can go off, and who knows what they'll do with themselves, whether it's finding a gym or working out. In Mark's case, and he's not the only athlete we've seen, he kind of transformed his body. And as a veteran who plays a certain style, how does that help him in a playoff run that he is cut some weight and he's suddenly this people want to say this like this runway model, but he's the chiseled Marc Gasol now.
Well, you know, give him credit. You know, I always say about myself, I'm in good shape for the shape I'm in, you know. So give Marc Gasol, you know, he bought in. And, you know, and he's a free agent, as is Serge Ibaka and Fred VanVleet at the end of the year. You know, and now you have all your colleagues and everyone together, 22 of the 30 teams under one roof. So, you know, you're not only trying to win for your own team, but you're trying to make an impression about maybe the next contract that theoretically could be the last contract of his career. So you want to, first impressions are lasting. You don't get a second chance to make the right first impression. You know, what's the impression people are going to get of you in this environment? So I give him a lot of credit. He's critical. I mean, he passes it. He screens. He rebounds. He can stretch the defense out with his three-point shooting. He just has a tremendous feel for what it takes to win. He understands what the other nine guys on the floor are doing, and he sees it all and feels it all, and he's a great teammate. And most importantly, he's a traffic cop for your defense. He's a tremendous talker on your defense in terms of screen and roll coverage, all the different screen sequences, and just is really dialed in, and I think lifts the basketball intellect of everyone on the team. I love watching him going into timeouts, within timeouts, walking out of timeouts, and the discussions he has with teammates, and the level of alertness and dial-in from his teammates when they have an exchange with him. He really gets everyone going in terms of nobody's goofing around. They're all dialed into being professional and winning games.
Jack, before I let you go, I kind of buried the most important question. Are you ready for the NBA playoffs?
I'm looking forward to it. I'm excited about it. And, obviously we have 8 games to play before that. And the first one right off the bat, I think it's August 1st. I don't have it in front of me, but I think that's the date. The Raptors open up against the Lakers. You know, so, and the Lakers will have played, if I'm not mistaken, on July 30th, which is 2 days prior, against the Clippers. That's an incredibly tough game for the Lakers to play. A lot of emotion and a lot of attention will be on that. And quite frankly, I don't think either team will be at a point to play like they normally look, or they would have looked in a traditional playoff environment. Mm-hmm. And now the Raptors are getting them on the second game, and it's their first game out of the chute. So I'm excited about it. I think the Raptors, people are like, whoa, what about, you know, this schedule they're playing is really tough. I think it's good. I think playing eight good opponents, you know, we all know about that level of exposure where you play good teams and, you know, you find out a little bit more about yourself when you play good opponents. And I think it toughens you up. It hardens you. It gets you better and better for the rigors of what the playoffs are. So I don't know what they're going to look like for those eight games, what their record's going to be, but I do think it'll help them be sharper and finer tuned for the playoff games when it comes.
Jack, it was a rhetorical question. We all know that you will be ready for the playoffs. But
always ready.
Always ready.
I don't matter. The players matter. That's what matters.
Yeah. Jack, hey, we appreciate you coming on the show. Love the insight and love the fact that we are getting closer and closer to hearing your voice and watching basketball actually being played.
Well, Mark, thank you so much. And Dave, hit him straight, not too often.
Okay,
he
great.
Always hits
Thanks,
him straight.
Jack.
He does. There's Jack Armstrong, our basketball analyst, joining us on Overdrive. And a reminder that TSN 1050 is supporting the launch of Legends Go Live in support of the Princess Margaret. Every ballot purchased gives you a chance to win legendary experiences, and all proceeds support world-leading cancer research. Experiences range from virtual cooking classes to in-person skill sessions to seats behind the glass with some NHL All-Star players, including Wendell Clark, Doug Gilmore, and more. Help to conquer cancer in our lifetime. Head to legendsgolive.com and buy your ballots today. Don't miss your chance to go live with a legend. Contest closes August 20th. When we return, an update from Ohio on the PGA Tour and why it could be a huge weekend for Canada. Overdrive continues, TSN 1050, the TSN app, and also on TSN 4.
Now, back to Overdrive. Count it up, count it up, count it up, count it, count it up, count it up, count it up, count it, count it up, count it up.
Well, last night, MLS is back, played their first match in Orlando. In a couple of minutes, the Toronto Blue Jays, which I have CP24 up, and they are showing the Blue Jays right now, getting ready for this intra-squad game. Of course, we've had golf for a while, and man, the Canadians are having themselves a day. Three Canadians in the top 10 right now. Adam Hadwin having the best day. He is one shot off the lead. He shot a 666 today. Nick Taylor is just one shot off of Hadwin. He's tied for third. And Roger Sloan is still playing on the back nine right now. He's on 16. He's four under, tied for eighth. Go Canada.
Yeah, Mackenzie Hughes, David Hearn, and
all under par.
Corey Connors all rounding it out. And two under, one under, one under. So it could be a big weekend for the Canadians. And of course, so Corey and Mackenzie Hughes would both have gone to school in the state of Ohio at Kent State. So a little bit native for them playing in Columbus, Ohio at Jack's wonderful Muirfield course, one of the great golf courses in the world. It'll be really fun moving into Friday. I think at some point you've got to stop saying he's really good for a Canadian. Like,
oh, yeah.
You know, these are really good golfers. I mean, this is a really, and we're back to what we were talking about Vince Carter's impact on the young hockey players. This is the Mike Weir impact.
I was just going to say
this is
that.
Mike Weir winning in 2003.
Are we still, like, I'm thinking of, a lot of these guys are in their late 20s.
Yeah.
A couple of guys that would, I guess would be like in their early 30s. David Hearn's a little bit older.
But perfect wheelhouse for Mike Weir in the early 2000s.
Right.
Perfect wheelhouse, Mark.
Yeah.
Perfect age to love the game and to play and the impact that this group will have on the next generation.
Mike Weir would have a huge impact on Canadian golfers. I also think Tiger, he just had an impact in general.
No question.
Like when I grew up, you know, golf suddenly became cool. And a lot of that was on Tiger. And those the same group of friends that I'm thinking of when I look back at what I was like at 11 and 12, no chance that they were going to be into golf if not for Tiger Woods. You know, they were a lot of like basketball players and guys who were into football and baseball. And suddenly, here's Tiger, who not only drove the ball 300 yards, it's just there was something about him that...
Yeah, there was an aura about him, Mark, that he just transcended the game. I mean, it was... You know, that's one of the greats and special athletes. Mm-hmm. And we got to see him in his prime. We got to see him in his absolute prime. And you better believe that has an effect on young players.
Right. And we didn't really get to this, but he announced he's going to play next weekend.
Same golf course, and it'll be the Memorial, which is Jack Nicklaus's tournament. And they've decided to stay in Columbus for two straight weeks and play the golf course, which is a tribute as well to the greenskeepers, the superintendent, that they could handle playing the PGA players 2 weeks in a row, because they beat up a golf course pretty well when they play. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to do that and have Tiger coming back next week, I think will be huge.
Yeah, so that'll be fun to watch. It'll be fun to see what goes on in these intra-squad games. And, you know, I don't want to say it because it's going to jinx it, because we've done this before, you and I, on Overdrive, where we thought something might happen while we were together on the show.
But tomorrow could be a good day for us.
We could be a good day for the NHL. We could be hearing about something becoming official.
Would that be great.
It feels like it's already official, but you know, when you're talking about hotels and teams getting assigned to hotels in certain cities, we're getting there.
It's all positive stuff, and I believe the Board of Governors will be getting their final presentation from the league early afternoon tomorrow.
Yeah.
So hopefully that'll be, you know, literally crossing the T's and dotting the I's and saying, we're ready, we're going back. And once again, and I know this has been said, you know, many times in many different formats, but if this all goes through, it's quite a head nod to both the league and the NHL Players Association, Don Fehr and his group, Gary Bettman and his group, who's taken a lot of heat over the years, mm-hmm. and be able to say, not only did we battle through and find a return to play, but we're moving towards 6 years plus, right, with options of labor peace and looking to do what's best for the game of hockey.
And I don't want to discount the hard work that was done behind the scenes, but it seemed like it was a very smooth operation. And we'll never know if it would have been this smooth if not for the world that we are unfortunately having to live through right now.
Right.
But that is the silver lining in a season that was totally disrupted. I know no one wants the revenues to be what they are, and no one wants the salary cap to be what they are, and the players definitely don't want the escrow to be what they are, but here we are. So we're expecting some good news tomorrow. You and I will be back here.
Something to celebrate, hopefully, on a Friday.
That's right. 4 p.m. Guess what? We'll chat then.
We'll chat then.